It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is stubbornly 49 degrees and the entire town is swathed in a sticky, foggy mist. Out of the airport, in fact, they're showing east winds at 13 miles per hour and they are down to 2 miles of visibility. Coming up on the Midday Report, a small plane crashed on Sunday near the village of Old Harbor. A new housing agency has rolled out its first round of grants. They are trying to build 80 new homes across the state. And the Highland Games occurred last weekend in Homer. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A suspect has been charged with murder and other crimes for a deadly mass shooting that took place in Philadelphia Monday night. NPR's Joe Hernandez reports 40-year-old Kim Brady Carricker was arrested by police shortly after the attack.
Five people are dead and two others, including a toddler, were wounded by gunfire. Others were injured by broken glass. Josephine Wama's brother, Joseph, was among those killed.
I just don't understand why this happened. Like, he was a kind soul. He was nice to everyone. He was good to everyone.
The suspect, Kim Brady Carricker, allegedly used an AR-15-style rifle to carry out the evening attack and was wearing body armor and a ski mask. Authorities say the shooting was random and that the suspect didn't know any of the victims. Joe Hernandez, NPR News, Philadelphia.
Gun violence was rampant over the Independence Day holiday. In addition to Philadelphia, Florida, Texas, Baltimore, and the nation's capital are among the places where mass shootings are also under investigation. In all, at least 60 people were injured or killed while they were taking part in various holiday celebrations. Lab tests confirmed that the white powdery substance found inside the White House over the weekend was cocaine. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre addressed the matter at a news briefing with reporters this afternoon.
We have confidence that the Secret Service is going to get to the bottom of this. As you all know, the president follows all the reporting here, and he certainly was briefed by his staff on everything that we know so far. But the Secret Service is investigating this, is investigating what happened over the weekend, and we have confidence that they will get to the bottom of this.
She addressed a probe as President Biden was hosting the Prime Minister of Sweden in the Oval Office ahead of the upcoming NATO summit in Lithuania. Sweden is seeking entry to the military alliance in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine early last year, but NATO member Turkey remains opposed. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is on her way to China for a series of meetings with that country's economic leaders. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the talks are intended to open new lines of communication between the world's two biggest economies.
Yellen's trip comes at a time of growing friction between the U.S. and China. Both countries have restricted exports to one another. There have also been close calls between military forces, the spectacle of the Chinese spy balloon over the U.S., and President Biden's recent description of China's president, Xi Jinping, as a dictator. Against that backdrop, Yellen hopes to build stronger communications with a new team of economic leaders in China. Treasury officials say they want to avoid any misunderstandings between the superpowers that might lead to a further souring of relations. While in China, Yellen also plans to meet with U.S. business leaders and members of the Chinese public. Scott Horsley, NPR News.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average closes down 129 points, ending the day at 34,288. This is NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. A small plane crashed near the village of Old Harbor on the southeast side of Kodiak Island on Sunday afternoon. As KMXT's Brian Benoit reports, the Piper Cherokee crashed just 6 minutes and 12 miles into its flight.
5 people were aboard the Piper Cherokee when it went down about 3 miles north of Old Harbor on Sunday, according to the Coast Guard. The crash was reported around 3:30 p.m. 2 people are reported to be dead. 3 survivors were found at the crash site. 1 person was in critical condition and taken by helicopter to Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center. 2 others were injured but in stable condition. Clint Johnson is the Alaska Region Chief for the National Transportation Safety Board, which is leading the investigation into the crash.
Preliminary information would indicate that they were on their way back from a lodge in Old Harbor back to Kodiak. As far as the purpose of the flight, we don't know exactly what it was. We assume it was probably returning to Kodiak.
The plane was operated by Kodiak-based Vertigo Air Taxi. The company declined to comment on Monday. Johnson says it's too early to speculate the cause of the crash.
It's a process of elimination. Nothing has been eliminated at this point right now.
NTSB meteorologists are already looking into weather patterns in the area at the time of the crash. Johnson says they will also question survivors and the pilot as part of the investigation. Preliminary reports will be published on the board's website in the next 2 weeks. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
As of this afternoon, Alaska State Troopers have not yet released the names of the pilot and passengers. A new housing agency has rolled out its first round of grants. The idea is to kickstart the construction of about 80 new homes across the state. Housing Alaskans, a public-private partnership known as HAP, was formed to ease Alaska's severe housing shortage. It puts money where the need is great. So far, it's funded homes for seniors, low to middle income families, survivors of domestic violence, and those in need of supportive housing. But as KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, HAP's mission is bigger than just building homes.
With $4 million in requests, the $750,000 in grants that HAP gave out is really just a drop in the bucket. But it's what HAP calls the first in a series of strategic investments.
It was expensive to build up here before, but it's really expensive now.
Preston Simmons, who chairs the board for HAP, says the housing shortage hurts not just those who need a place to live, but the entire state.
It's causing real hardship for recruiting and workforce, and also a lot of families are leaving the state just because of cost and affordability of homes.
A big problem, Preston Simmons says, especially for communities with tourism, is the high number of rentals converted to Airbnbs or short-term rentals. Michelle French, RuralCAP's Director of Rural Housing, says that trend has hit Soldotna hard because there's no longer incentive for landlords to rent to low- and middle-income families.
They can make quite a lot of money in a very short period of time, and so it's taking all of those homes off of the long-term rental market, and it's making it very difficult for families to be able to find long-term rentals or if they're looking to become homeowners.
HAP's funding comes just in time to help RuralCAP finish a self-help housing project for 9 families in Soldotna, which saw the pandemic drive up costs with delays and price hikes for building materials. In this project, families supply about 65% of the labor to build their homes and get low-interest loans to pay off the rest. Faith Tulick from Hooper Bay, a community on the Bering Sea coast, knows firsthand how important RuralCAP's self-help program is. She got involved in an earlier RuralCAP project after she had moved to the Kenai Peninsula to finish her schooling, but then decided against moving back home.
There'd be no way we could get our own place out there.
Tulick says the only option for her husband and 2 children would have been to move into her mother's home.
So like my mom, my sister and her kids, and my brother and my younger sisters, some might have like smaller homes with just about the same amount of people.
Faith Tulick says it's typical for families in Hooper Bay to double up, even triple up in their homes, often with about 10 people to a household. She says she wishes that there could be a self-help housing project for Hooper Bay. Perhaps someday, if HAP accomplishes all that it hopes to do. Preston Simmons says HAP wants to work with other nonprofits to find creative solutions to Alaska's housing shortage.
Alaskans have a lot of great ideas and work really hard, but there are so many different organizations, they often work in different silos. If you can create a coordinating entity that kind of connects those dots, you can get a lot done.
At the top of Simmons' list, to find ways to cut down on the cost of supplies, especially to rural Alaska, where the cost of housing averages about $9 per square foot, about three times more than in urban areas. Another problem for rural Alaska, the age of homes. Most were built in the 1970s and 80s and will require not only the materials, but code changes to get the grants to help fund the repairs. Michelle French says changing the rules is hard to do for agencies like hers with limited resources.
Sometimes it's a very long process and people will start and then give up.
French hopes HAP can succeed where others have failed. Simmons says housing is an investment worth making because it's key to solving many of Alaska's other problems, from health to homelessness to boosting the economy, and yes, key in the pursuit of happiness. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
More than 800 runners tackled rain and treacherous trail on Independence Day in Seward's grueling Mount Marathon race. David Norris, originally from Fairbanks, took first place in the men's race with a time of 44 minutes and 51 seconds. He says it was one of the toughest races he's ever run.
It's probably the gnarliest I've ever seen. Just like super muddy down in the woods. And then even up top where it's usually just like dry rock, even that had like a little mud mixed in.
This year marked the 95th running of the race that sends runners up and back down the towering Mount Marathon on the 4th of July. Norris now lives in Colorado and has run the Mount Marathon race four times. He's also won four times. He set the record of 41 minutes and 26 seconds in 2016. In the women's race, Christy Marvin of Palmer came out on top with a time of 52 minutes and 52 seconds.
This is my 10th year, and it was my goal to make it in the top three all 10 years in a row. And I did it today with a third win, so I'm super stoked.
She pulled off a close first place just 15 seconds ahead of runner-up Meg Inokuma of Palmer. Marvin says the rain made the race especially tough this year. It slowed down all the runners who had to be careful not to slip. The course was so muddy that competitors had to hose themselves off at the finish line.
The conditions were an absolute nightmare and a huge mess, and I was really nervous both for my boys this morning and then for myself this afternoon.
Marvin wasn't the only one in her family with a first-place win yesterday. Her 16-year-old son, Kobe, won the Mount Marathon boys' race, and 15-year-old Tanya Boonstra of Kenai won the girls' race. Stones, hammers, and tree trunks hurled through the air in Homer last weekend at the annual Kachemak Bay Highland Games, a chance for athletes from Alaska and beyond to show off their strength alongside Celtic musicians and local vendors. KBBI's Sabine Pooks was at the game Saturday and has this story.
Come on, guys, field record here.
Wearing a kilt speckled with ironed-on patches, Anchorage athlete Rob Moody picks up a large burlap cube using a pitchfork and faces a tall gate. Travis Ogden of Homer watches on.
So that's a burlap bag with hay and sometimes chain in it to make it heavy enough. And it's 16 pounds, and I think he's throwing it 33 feet, but I'm not sure. So this is, if he makes this, it's a field record.
Moody throws the bag, known as a sheaf, and narrowly misses the mark, getting the height right but not quite nailing the placement. Still, it's higher than anyone's thrown a sheaf today, which makes Moody the winner in his age category. Ogden and the other athletes hoot and holler for their teammates.
I think when this starts at the beginning of the event, none of us know each other's names, and probably two events in, we all know each other's names, and everybody cheers each other on. It's kind of nice.
The sheaf toss is one of the events in the annual Kachemak Bay Highland Games, a celebration of Scottish culture and great feats of strength. There are games every year in Palmer and in Homer, where Renee Krause has been coordinating for 12 years.
We're really busy this year. There seems to be a lot more people coming through, and a lot more people from out of the area, too.
Krause attended Highland Games as a kid in Florida and today clerks Homer's Parks Commission, which is where the local games started in 2011. This year's event is in memory of her daughter, Rhiannon Winstead, who did the artwork for the organization and passed away fighting a battle with cancer last year. Today, the games in Homer bring up judges from Idaho and athletes from around the country.
We've got two athletes on the field that are from California. We had a runner for the Kilted 5K that was from Australia.
Krause says sometimes they'll get tourists who are vacationing in Homer and decide to sign up. The games also draw a wide range of spectators, like Kim Keck of Soldotna. He's watching from beneath a shady tree as athletes toss sheafs and cabers, or large tree trunks. And like many others, he's taken the chance to dress the theme, a combination of traditional Scottish and medieval garb.
I have what's called a modern kilt. This is the tartan of Clan MacNeil. My grandmother was a MacNeil and from the Isle of Barra. And so
Keck wears a purse around his waist and a dagger in his kilt band. On his feet are knee-high leather boots he bought at a Renaissance festival in his home state of Maryland.
It's a great chance to get outside, enjoy the beautiful weather, and have fun, and have some food, and listen to some music, and dress up in costume.
The Scottish Games have taken Anchorage's Rob Moody around the continent. He's the athlete who was trying to beat the sheaf toss record at the top.
I actually grew up down the street from where the big one used to be in Eagle River. So it started about the time I was born in the early 80s, and kind of watched it as I was growing up. Knew one day I'm going to do this. I really want to do it.
He says it's easier on the body than other sports, like powerlifting. And he says it's a lot of fun.
You finally find something that you're good at. You know what I mean? I just took to it like a duck to water, if you know what I mean.
Anchorage athlete Shahala Walsh is watching the heavyweight toss a few yards away. She's been coming to the games for 3 years. Her nickname is Giggles.
It was my yes year, and my boss asked me if I wanted to do this, and I said yes. And then I said, what is it? She said, I'll tell you after you sign up. And so I did, and then I found out. And I've been doing it ever since. It's super fun.
Gabriella Reinhardt of Anchorage started throwing in 2021.
So I used to do track and field in high school and college. And then I found out about the Highland Games, and so it was a lot of pressure, but I got through it, and now I love it. So I tell anybody who can, do the Highland Games.
To those who are thinking about getting involved next year, she says, just do it.
We have a beautiful community. Like me, you know, African-American, I'm not Scottish, and I was welcomed immediately. So just open your mouth and say, hey, I want to try this, I want to do this, and we'll welcome you in.
And who knows, you might take to it like a duck to water, too. In Homer, I'm Sabine Pooks.
More than a year after Cook Inlet's largest oil and gas producer warned of a looming gas shortfall, consultants released a report this week detailing possible ways to fill in the gap by importing gas overseas in the short term and from the North Slope in the longer term. As KDLL's Sabine Pooks reports, those options will all come with higher price tags, but with contracts running out, utilities don't have much choice.
Lisa Wilcox presented the report to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. She's a project manager with Berkeley Research Group. She says she's not as concerned about the long-term picture for utilities, since she thinks Alaska could import liquefied natural gas at a reasonable price from the world market.
But it's short to medium term that I think we're all concerned about.
The gas supply report was commissioned by natural gas utility NSTAR and a working group of Alaska utilities from Homer to Fairbanks, which get the vast majority of their power supply from Cook Inlet natural gas. But that available supply is running out. Last year, the primary producer, Hillcorp, said it couldn't guarantee future contracts with utilities. And now, despite decades of warning and previous close calls, demand for gas could outstrip supply in as few as 4 years. Wilcox says utilities will need to find new sources of gas from a mix of places. She says the first option would be to attract more investment in Cook Inlet, but with little interest there from producers, that option likely can't satisfy long-term needs. Another preferred alternative outlined in the report is to import natural gas from overseas. That could start as soon as 2028. And another would be to bring gas down from the North Slope with an in-state pipeline, which the report says would only be cost-effective with state subsidies. That pipeline wouldn't be ready until 2030 at the earliest, the report says. In all cases, costs will go up for Alaska ratepayers, who already see some of the highest energy costs in the country. The in-state pipeline could more than double gas costs for consumers.
Well, and unfortunately, in this case, as you can see, the cost of transportation for this level of demand on a privately owned project and privately modeled project is very significant and higher than many of the other options.
The cheapest gas option outlined in the report would come from the big Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Export Project, which would ship gas down from the North Slope for use in state and export overseas. AKLNG has been decades in the making and has long stalled due to high costs. Wilcox, the consultant, was formerly a vice president of the company that's overseeing the project. Ben Becker is with the Alaska Public Interest Research Group. He says he worries about the state committing to big projects like a pipeline.
And if the state is going to be subsidizing energy, I think it makes less sense to subsidize projects that prolong our dependence on gas instead of energy projects that make us less dependent on gas, more energy independent with a more diverse grid.
The report accounts for alternative gas supply options only, as a natural gas utility, NSTAR doesn't have many more options to diversify its portfolio. But renewables advocates say electric utilities need to start ramping up their renewable portfolios as solar and wind projects become cost competitive with natural gas. Becker says he wants to see more analysis of how renewables could reduce Alaska's demand for gas in the future.
There are long-term solutions that would really double down on our gas dependence and others that would reduce it.
The report was the first from the consulting group. Wilcox says the next report will hone in on a shorter list of local gas replacement options. She says a decision on at least one alternative could be made by the end of 2023. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Meta is getting ready to challenge Twitter. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. The parent company of Facebook and Instagram plans to launch a Twitter-like messaging app called Threads. Apple's App Store indicates a Thursday launch. The move comes after Twitter angered many users over the weekend by limiting the number of posts they can read. A judge has issued an injunction barring federal agencies from alerting social media companies about content the agencies deem to be misinformation. Exemptions include national security threats. The judge said the government likely violated free speech rights. UPS and the Teamsters Union are trading barbs, accusing each other of walking away from negotiations over a new labor contract. The union is poised to strike if there's no deal by the end of the month. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by KeyBank. Learn more at key.com/techtrends.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. Feels like a Monday, the fifth day of July, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 5:17. It will set again at 10:09. That will give us 17 hours and 52 minutes of daylight, which is a loss of 1 minute and 57 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 78 degrees set in 1999, and our record low was 38 set in 1938. And again in 1971. Currently 49 degrees in Kodiak under a thick, heavy, foggy mist. Humidity is at 97% at the airport, where they have east winds at 13 miles per hour, and they are down to 2 miles of visibility. Rain is likely this afternoon, tonight, and tomorrow. Just a 30% chance of rain on Friday. Cloudy skies through the period with a high near 54 today and tomorrow. Overnight low around 49. Southeast winds through the period up to maybe 10 miles per hour. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up. That will happen at 4:58, call it 5 p.m. here on the east side, and be 7.4 feet, followed by a low tide at 10:09 p.m. of 2 feet. We do have another very low minus tide coming up tomorrow morning, late tomorrow morning, 11:07 a.m. here on the east side, will be a minus 2-foot tide. Over on the west side, your high tide will be happening at 5:16 this afternoon, and be 13.3 feet in Larson Bay, followed by a low tide at 10:58, call it 11 p.m., of 2.9 feet. And in Larson Bay, your very low tide for tomorrow morning will be at 11:37 and be minus 3.1 feet in Larson Bay. Well, let's hear what the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has to say.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with revised Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 13, date issued 11:05 on the 4th of July. There will be a 105-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Thursday, July 6th to 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th in the following areas in the Outer Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. The Northwest Kodiak District, except for the Kujawiak Bay section, will remain closed. The Northeast Kodiak District, except for the Buskin River section, will remain closed. The Eastside Kodiak District, except for Passaic Bay, will remain closed. The Afognak District, except for the Duck Bay section, will close at 9 p.m. Saturday, July 8th. And the Inner Katoy, Outer Katoy, and Iqaluit Bay sections remain closed. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Thursday, July 6th to 9 p.m. Saturday, July 8th in the following areas. In the Cape Alitak, Humpy Dead Man, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District. The Outer Iqaluit and Halba Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District. The Mainland District and the Duck Bay section of the Afognak District. After 12:01 a.m., July 6th, until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak districts south of a latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Concerning the North Shelikof Strait fishery, short-notice in-period closures may occur for the seine fisheries in the seaward zones of the North Shelikof Strait area, including the Cape Igvac section, as designated in the North Shelikof Strait Sockeye Salmon Management Plan. Closure announcements may occur at 8:30 a.m., 10 a.m., noon, 2 p.m., 5 p.m., or 8 p.m. on VHF Channel 6. The following areas that are currently open until further notice will close to commercial salmon fishing at 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Closed waters for Saltry Creek, stream number 259415, are the normal closed waters as described in regulation from noon Thursday, July 6th to 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th. Closed waters are currently reduced until 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th. In the Fowl Bay or in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406, and in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822, and to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. As previously announced, cost recovery fisheries have begun in Spearden Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Spearden Bay Special Harvest Area will remain closed to common property fishing. Fishery opportunities in Spearden Bay Special Harvest Area will depend on the ability of the Regional Aquaculture Association to meet cost recovery needs, and all cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-46559. That's 486-6559. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart, detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations and Statistical Charts, Harvest Strategies, and Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office, and of course the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing, and this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. On Tuesday, July 11th at 5:30 p.m., the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having its meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall. On Wednesday, July 12th, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. And on Thursday, July 13th, the Assembly will be having a work session in the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All meetings are open to the public, and meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office with questions at 907-486-9310. And remember, assembly meetings are live-streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. If you subscribe, they will send you live-stream notifications. This Saturday, there will be a celebration of the life of Dr. Gilbert Bain that will happen at Kodiak College at 1 p.m. in the Benny Benson Building. There's a potluck to follow, so please bring your favorite dish to share. Again, that's this Saturday, July 8th, starting at 1 p.m. in the Benny Benson Building, celebration of the life of Dr. Gil Bain. And the Kodiak Island Borough's Summer Food Service Program is continuing. That goes through August 17th. It's free and fresh meals to all kids all summer long. Ages 18 and under are free. And that happens 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. for breakfast and 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. for lunch at the High School Commons Monday through Thursday.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.